Welcome to the Nonprofit Executive Podcast, the podcast for growth-minded executives looking to take their organization to the next level through strategic planning and fundraising. This episode is brought to you by the Nonprofit Executive Club, the club for nonprofit executives. Go to nonprofitexecutiveclub.com to learn more. This is episode 17 of the podcast, and Mary Valone, always a pleasure welcoming you.
Hey, how are you, Joel?
Wonderful, wonderful. So we've covered a lot so far, and we look at the five steps that we've already covered in our last five episodes with you, and we've yet to ask for money. What's going on?
I know, it's kind of crazy. I know, I'm really challenging people to work on their patience. And so I hope you guys have been tracking with us through these first five steps, because those are the steps that really make this step so much easier. So I hope people can hear that it's like, it's not for naught. All that work is really going to prepare you. So many people ask me, Joel, they always say like, I just ask me to do anything. Just don't ask me to invite somebody to give us money. Like, I don't want to ask for money. Like, that is just the thing that I do not want to be a part of. And I understand people's fear over raising money and over asking for money, because it is awkward. If I've just met you for the first time and then I ask you for cash, it feels a bit awkward.
Yeah.
But if we've been doing all the other things right, by the time we're sitting across the table from somebody, we really are in a really great position, because we know each other, we know that they're a good fit, and they're really genuinely interested in hearing about how they can support the work that we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we get into organizing your ask today, if you can just run through the first five steps that have led to what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah. So just as a reminder, we're working through the word FREEDOM as our acronym. And so F is for focus your vision, R is for run your research, E is for enlist your team, the second E there is for enhance your brand, and then the D is deploy your team. And of course, today we're talking about organize your ask. So Joel, when I have a graphic actually that I show people often, and you guys can actually download that at maryvalone.com/roadmap. So maryvalone.com/roadmap, and that shows all seven of my steps. So when you see the graphic, it's like a Candyland kind of looking map, but it's two steps forward and then it S curves back. And so it feels like you're taking two steps forward and then you're taking a few steps back. And then this is where you gain momentum. And then this is where we take off. And so organize your ask. By the time we're here, we have run through that S curve and we are now on the home stretch to actually securing all the dollars that we need and fully funding our organization and the mission that we have, where we're like, we're ready, we've gained the momentum, and we're ready to take off. So this is why so many organizations and so many causes raise the kinds of money that they do, is because they did all the legwork that we've been talking about in these last several episodes. So today we are ready. We have everything in place, and now we're ready to start asking people for those funds.
Okay, so when we're ready to ask, but this is intentionally called organize your ask. So what do we need to organize to make sure we're in that best position to make that ask?
Yeah, so depending on how you're raising funds, everybody has their demographic of people that they serve and that they tend to raise funds from. So, you know that I work with quite a few missionaries and ministry leaders, mm-hmm. and a lot of them actually invite friends and family to come. And I know every organization, when you have staff people who, and especially several staff members, you tend to go after friends and family first, because it's like, well, they're the easiest to ask. They know and love you already. You've already built those relationships. But I caution you on when asking friends and family, and it's purely because you kind of have an unfair advantage. You know, they already love you. And so when you're organizing your ask, I want you to be thinking about, how do I approach friends and family? How do I approach organizations or corporations, companies? You know, how do I approach all these different people along the way? And sometimes you're maybe approaching churches or other organizations that are themselves nonprofits. So I know that it's really easy just to be like, well, you just go in and you ask. But you and I know that there is a process for every single group of people. And even just in the last week, I was talking with one of our clients and she was telling me about how she wanted to raise money through a silent auction. And so she's got this gala fundraiser she's putting on. And so raising money through a silent auction. And I told her, okay, here's the process. Here's how you organize your ask to prepare for receiving auction items and asking those people to be a part of your auction. There was a completely different process for that than what I would have given to her or what I would have said if she's saying like, hey, I'm looking to raise money through a sponsorship or I'm trying to sell tickets to that fundraiser or I'm trying to get a grant or, going and asking a foundation. So you guys know that sometimes you're filling out an application and sometimes you're, so all of that to be said is that every single group of people has a different approach to it. So I want to make sure that nobody's just doing a blanket approach to their fundraising. It's, we've got to organize ourselves so that we are received really well with every group of people that we're trying to attract in.
Great. That's great. So as we take a look at organizing that ask, one of the things you cover in your book is this concept, and I love this analogy of dating versus fundraising. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that concept?
Yeah, well, and it's such an easy way to think about your fundraising because, you know, whenever you talk to somebody and you're like, how did you meet your spouse? You know, how did you, connect with them? And it's like, well, we met at this thing and we had mutual friends and, you know, and so you can kind of hear about the general story of how somebody met somebody. It's like we were in the same place at the same time. Somebody introduced us and it was just a slow, progressive process. And we as fundraisers and as nonprofit executives tend to jump in and it's like, we just immediately go for the kill and we're like, let's get married. When can you start? Can we, and you are pushing those donors and potential donors immediately away because you come off desperate. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to date somebody who's desperate. They smell them out. They're like, stop calling me 100 times. Leave me alone. Like, how much does that sound like nonprofits?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so aggressive. And so I want people to start looking at this as a dating process. You meet somebody for the first time and you don't immediately jump right in, but you shake their hand, you get to know them, you start asking questions about what are you interested in? What do you like? And you start to find out if you are mutually, if you like the same things, if you're compatible. And now I'm not saying that they have to be like your best friend or they have to be so connected to you, but all I'm saying is that we care about the same thing, that our cause and their interest in our cause is mutually beneficial for both us and them. And that's what makes a great relationship, is where it's a win-win on both sides. And we oftentimes will jump right in and we'll say, well, we just want you to write us a check. And the thing is that, you know, when I met my husband, I didn't meet him with the intention of buy me a ring. Buy me a house, buy me a car, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, it wasn't that, like, I want a long-term, like, buy me the house, the ring, the car, you know, like, it's all of it. It's like, when you have that long-term relationship, now it's like, the relationship is so much stronger. And when you need help, those donors are going to be like, what do you need? How can we help you? We want to be in this with you. So it's just a much better relationship all the way around when you really start thinking about it in that dating to marriage kind of relationship.
Yeah. Okay. This is interesting because, you know, as I take organizations and groups through strategic planning, we always talk about funding. Funding and financials are always number one or two on the list of challenges. And how can we do a better job of that? But when we think about, in that conversation, they think about businesses and corporations that they would like to approach as part of their plan to raise funds. They're immediately, and this is good because now you're making me think when I'm in those discussions, mm-hmm. A lot of times they think, oh, we've got to go after that business and get a $10,000 or $20,000+ gift from them. And it's like, whoa. How do we want to start the relationship before we ever, how can we work ourselves up to get in a position of that? And I don't know, Mary, does that take a year? Does it take 3 years to work up? What's been your experience in working towards getting those major, major gifts?
Yeah. So studies show that it takes about 12 months to get a major gift. And obviously every organization has a different definition of a major gift. For you, it might be a couple thousand dollars. For some, it may be millions of dollars. So that's where you just kind of have to identify what is a major gift for your cause. But yeah, typically it's about a year to build that relationship. So think about that from we don't know them at all to a year later and hey, we've done some things together and now they trust us and now they're interested in doing more with us. So it does take a while. And that's why I tell people, especially when you're doing a larger campaign or you're trying to raise more money than maybe you have before. And it is, you've got to build those relationships over a period of time. But Joel, you hit on it though, by saying that it's like most causes, most organizations, they will say like, we're trying to raise X dollars and we need people who are going to give $10,000 or $20,000. And well, hey, these people, they could give that kind of money. So let's just go ask them for $10,000 or $20,000. And that is very common. That is a very common internal conversation that's being had. But here's how I want you to reshape and reframe that conversation is I want to start looking at companies that align with your brand. So back to your branding and, you know, looking at what do you stand for? And I want to see a cause and say, or a company and say, you know what? They believe, I'm just going to use breast cancer, for instance. Okay. So here's some company that's out there putting pink stuff all over everything. And that's awesome. And I'm running an organization that cares about breast cancer. Awesome. Well, what am I going to do? I'm like immediately going to see, well, hey, they have a genuine interest in this topic. So let's sit down and find out why do they care about breast cancer? Why are they doing some of this? And find out maybe there's an individual in the company that's, you know, gone through this, maybe a spouse or someone, and digging into the conversation just to find out where did this even come from? You might come to find out that they don't really care about the cause at all. They have generally no interest, but hey, people are slapping pink on everything. So they're just along for the ride. You know, so you just don't know until you have a conversation with somebody and say, you know what, you know, we've been thinking about you guys for a long time. We wanted to invite you to be a part of it. So when I teach these seven steps, one of the major things that I teach around enlist your team. So back in step three, talking about building out your team, what I want to see happen there is I want to invite people to sit at the table there during the enlist your team phase. And especially I teach on advisory groups. So I typically will invite people and say, hey, I want you to serve in my advisory group. I want you to be on my team. And I want you to consider doing a give or get of a certain amount of money. So what you're saying here, like here's this corporation that they want engaged. I'm okay to go and make an ask of $10,000 if you want the executive to serve on your advisory team and there's a give or get of $10,000. But that means that once they signed on with that advisory group, now they're saying, hey, we're going to give or get $10,000, but we're going to be with you. So it's not about the money. It's about saying, hey, there's a bar and that's just the bar that we're setting for this particular advisory group. So there's lots of different ways that you can engage donors by asking them for funds up front, but also saying, we don't want this to just be a one and done conversation. We want you guys to invest in our organization and then be with us year after year after year. So I hope that makes sense. I know that I just spent actually a full 90-minute conversation with a group of my clients, you know, so I have a program called Fundraising Freedom Academy, as you know, and these guys are sitting around the table building out their advisory teams. And so when we're talking about this, I'm talking about organize your ask. I'm like, who do you want in this advisory team? And so it is very strategic. Joel's favorite word. Yeah. Very, very strategic. We are not just like, they got money, they got money, they got money. It's like, that's not how we're building out our teams. We're building out our teams based on ethics and they align with our values. And, you know, we really like these people. They've shown an interest in what we've done in the past, or we've shown an interest in what they're doing. So lots of different ways that you can start to approach people and invite them in.
You know, with all of this, with this process, and you talked about it a little bit ago about patience, mm-hmm. in being patient to put yourself in a position where it's not just, hey, we had success in this period of time, but it's ongoing success by way of partnerships, right? Mm-hmm. So it is a mind shift. What do you say to that organization that says, well, yeah, I appreciate that, Mary, but I need X amount of dollars in the next 6 months. Yeah. What do I do? Can you help me?
Yeah. And that's a very common concern. So, right. I mean, everybody's like, I need money and I need it yesterday, right. Which is why you and I are having this conversation about have a strategic plan that you're planning out 3, 5, 10 years down the road so that you're never in this frantic place again. Like, you should not be asking for dollars that you needed last month. Mm-hmm. You know, and that is, but I understand that that may be the situation that you're in, and that's not, you're not in an uncommon situation. You're not alone. I understand that. And so sometimes you're doing fundraisers because they're a quick win. And that's where people are just, hey, we're just going to go knock on doors and we're going to invite people to kind of put a Band-Aid on what we need right now. But we're going to tell them about the plans that we're building for the future so that we can, you know, continue to do this, but do it, you know, where we're not asking for tomorrow. One thing I want people to think about too is that when you're putting on a fundraiser of any sort, I know it's easy to want to say like, I want to get that fundraiser done in the next, you know, 1, 2, 3 months. You know, we're just going to slap this thing together. Mm-hmm. We're going to put a nice coat of paint on it and we're going to make it look really pretty. But the thing is that what's the difference if I did that fundraiser in 1, 2, or 3 months, or I did that fundraiser in 13, 14, or 15 months out, and start thinking about how the relief and the like, just the thought about, hey, I don't have to put that fundraiser on tomorrow. I'm going to be planning for a fundraiser that's in, you know, next year, that's in a year, and we have plenty of time to plan for it. I want to remind people that you can start accepting donations. And I think I might have mentioned this before, is that you can start collecting donations today for a fundraiser that's in a year. I mean, the urgency is whatever you place on it. So that's where I like to use the calendar to create urgency. That's where I start saying, okay, I've got print deadlines. I've got deadlines for when certain, so if I'm going after a sponsorship ask, let's just say the fundraiser is in a year. And right now I'm looking at, I'm going to try and get a presenting sponsor. I'm going to try and get, you know, maybe an entertainment sponsor, a food and beverage sponsor, a location sponsor, whatever. We're starting to look at how can we actually raise funds for that fundraiser. So what I'm doing though, is I'm setting a deadline where we have to have our sponsors secured within the next 3 months. So now mentally I'm securing sponsors over the next 3 months, but as soon as that deadline hits, we're moving from sponsors over to tickets, or we're moving from sponsors over into, you know, silent auction items into tickets, you know? So I just want people to see that it's like, if you plan out further in advance, you can get the larger sponsorship dollars, and then you're not frantically just trying to pick up auction items or trying to sell tickets last minute.
Boy, I like how you're sort of spacing this out where it's not all happening at one time and everyone's freaking out.
Yeah. Well,
building or growing into it, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think that what I find is that, of course, a lot of nonprofit executives are very driven, you know, really, really driven people. You guys are, you feel the urgency of raising those dollars and fulfilling your mission because there are people waiting for your services. There are people that need you. And so that's why I want to remind you that it's like, I get the mental struggle, the stuff that's going on in your head. And I oftentimes have to have conversations with executive directors, just telling them that I'm like, whose timeline are you on? You know, like whose timeline are you working off of? Because I know you are setting unrealistic expectations for yourself. No one else is.
Right.
No one else is on you. Now, I understand sometimes you got a board of directors or you're not the executive director. You might be the development staff, whatever it is. But most of the time, and in my nearly, you know, 20 years of fundraising, I know the hardest person on me is me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the one who's saying we should have raised more money by this date. We should have had this in by this date. We should have do this, you know, and it's like, so I have to almost give myself permission to say, you know what, I'm going to do this during this window. And then I'm going to set that aside. And then I'm going to give myself permission to move on to the next thing and say, you know what, that's just what it is. It is what it is. It maybe we didn't raise as much as we wanted. Maybe we need to move on to the next thing. But for the most part, I just think that by shifting your, you know, just your calendar in your own head to say, you know what are we working towards? And so Joel, that's why I think that what we're talking about so perfectly marries each other. And the fact that it's like, if you have a strategic plan that you're following, if you're following your strategic plan, yes, then you're looking 3 years out. So you're like, okay, what do I need to do to raise this money? And so now you're making better decisions overall on how you're going to make the ask.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to switch gears here for a second and ask you kind of a weird question. You know how you see on TV when there's a reporter and there's always those people in the background that think they've got to do something in the background because the camera's on.
Yeah.
Well, money seems to have that effect on people, right? It yeah, does funny things to people. So
it does. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So talk about, I mean, money, look, what we're talking about here is money is a tool, and it's how we use that tool to make a larger impact or allows us to do things. But can you talk about money, the power of money, and just the mindset around money?
Yeah, you know, Joel, that is one of the bigger issues here. I mean, it probably is the biggest issue when it comes to when people say, like, I don't want to ask for money. Somewhere along the line, they gave money more power than it actually deserves. And I spent, I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan. I, you know, paid off all my student loan debt using his program. And, you know, he's got a 7-step process, which is ultimately what kind of triggered me on creating my 7-step process. Mm. And one thing that he had shared in one of his trainings that he did was he was talking about how, you know, when I used to be an administrative assistant. So I started off in the nonprofit space as an admin. And so when you are managing somebody else's money, it is really easy. Now, I wrote checks. I spent money all over the place. I had zero emotion tied to that money. Mm-hmm. And that for some reason really triggered in me that I was like, I spend other people's money, no problem, no emotion, no high, no low around the money. But as soon as you flip the switch and now all of a sudden the money is yours, or you feel like the money is theirs and you're somehow trying to take it from them, you know, some fundraising is really easy. Okay. So like if I call up somebody for an auction item, I feel like that's like the easiest thing to ask for because they're going to give that food away. They're going to give gift certificates away anyways. They might as well give it to us and we can put it in our auction. You know, so I always tell people, I'm like, they get phone calls all the time. A lot of these organizations actually have websites set up so that you can just go and fill out the application and they just say, yep, you got it, or nope, you didn't. And that's kind of how grant writing is as well, is that it's like, just put your name in the hat, fill out the forms, do what they ask you to do, and you just might get some cash, you know? And so I do know that there's a lot of people that hide behind grants. They hide behind, you know, some of these kinds of fundraisers because they don't feel like it's that intrusive to ask somebody to give a product or a service or give from a fund that the money's just sitting there. So I just want you to see that it's like, there's so many ways that you can shift your thinking around money and give it less power because, you know, here thinking about building a building versus actually paying cash for a building, I actually don't really need cash. I need the supplies to build the building. I need the people who are going to provide the labor. I need all the, you know, just all the tradesmen who are going to come in and build that building. So in actuality, I don't really even need cash. But for some reason in our heads, it's like, oh, that cash is so much more valuable than somebody maybe donating their services or somebody donating an item to underwrite the cost of us building that building, you know? So I just want everybody to understand that it's like, go after those products and services, but also just think through how easy it is to shift your thinking around the power of money. But one brick and $1 equals the same thing. I don't know how much a brick costs, but maybe a brick is more than that. $5, you know? Yeah. So it's like you set a brick on the floor and you put a $5 bill on the floor. You know, I mean, like they're the same thing. So, but in our mind, cash is just so powerful and we have given it this power. And you know, back in the day, people didn't exchange money. They exchanged goods and services and they rarely even exchanged cash at all. But in today's age, like, I mean, we've just given so much power to that money that's not necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you talk about, and I know this is Giving USA does their annual, you know, a report around giving, about 70% or so. I think that number now in 2018, it was around 68% of those who gave it. It started with individuals. 68% were individuals. What about who? You know, when we talk about who you should ask when it comes to this, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, we just need the right decision maker. And what you just said about, you know, roughly about 70% of all donations come from individuals. And that's still about accurate, 70, 72. But I always tell people, I'm like, 100% of all donations come from individuals. Let's be honest. Humans, we're asking humans, okay? So whether they're representing, you know, a corporation, a bequest, you know, their own personal budget, their family budget, or whatever, it's all coming from individuals. So it all comes back to relationships. And so, you know, getting back to the place of where it's like, we've just got to build relationships with people and engage them in. So when we ask people for money, I always tell people the best people to make the ask are the people who have the best relationship with the person who's sitting across the table. And that does not matter what kind of money you're asking for. If it is the grants or the foundations or the corporations and individuals, all of that is the same philosophy, is that we just want to make sure that we invite people, you know, that have the best relationships. So this goes back to, once again, step three, you know, so our enlisting your team. So you will be able to raise way, 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 way more money for your organization and for your cause if you have the right team members, because you know, you get somebody who is on your team who has built relationships with people in the community for the past 60, 70, maybe even 80 years. And now all of a sudden it's like they've gone to school, their kids went to school together, they bought cars from that dealership, they bought a house from these people. Now all of a sudden it's like they have these lifelong relationships. And statistics show that 2/3 of people will give to a cause just because somebody that they know and trust ask them to give. That's why so many fundraisers are so effective when it comes to these walk run events, you know, the ones that are like, hey, will you pledge $100 from your friends and family, and they're building their teams and all that stuff. The only reason why that works is because the team leader is calling on their friends and family. But as soon as that team leader is gone, all that money is gone too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the danger of building your fundraisers that way. But if you build your fundraiser the way that we're talking about here, where you're building out a team that loves you and are sticking with you, then the donor base won't lose them. And that'll continue to grow with your organization as you grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you touched on this a moment ago about in-kind. When you're organizing your ask, do you know already going in, I'm going to ask these people for money, I'm going to ask these people for an in-kind donation of some sort, because you know we have these needs. I think that's ideal, but how often are you in a meeting or having a conversation where you know you want to ask for money, but then they throw you a curveball and say, you know what, we don't have it in the budget anymore this year, what else can we do for you? I mean, How much of this do you have to think on your feet and be flexible and be able to, you know, go in that direction with in kind?
Yeah. So in kind, I typically know before I walk in the door that I'm going to ask for something in kind. Mm-hmm. So I usually am, you know, compartmentalizing what I need, like, what do I need in kind? And so those are the companies that I'm going to be going after, because it was like, well, it makes sense that they would come on with us. So, but one of the things that I learned from one of my volunteers, who is just a really incredible saleswoman, was when we sat across the table, she always started with cash. So she would start the conversation by saying, we want you to be a sponsor. We want you to come on as a donor to our organization. Here's what that can look like. Here are the benefits. Here's what we can offer you, which is, you know, naming recognition and maybe a banner at our event, whatever. So she was really doing the negotiations around sponsorship and cash contributions. As soon as we identified, hey, we want you to be this sponsor. We want you to, like, let's just use an example of like, maybe like at our event, we had valet parking. So it made sense that a car dealership would be the valet, easy. So we went in and had a very specific dealership that we wanted to invite in. Think about, there are so many different dealerships. So I gave one dealership the first right of refusal. That's a big mouthful, but the first right of refusal, because we were like, we have had so many connections to them and they had been supportive in the past. So it made sense for us to ask them, hey, would you guys be interested in this? It was a $5,000 ask. Okay. So we asked them for their sponsorship. They said yes. And then part of their sponsorship was they had the ability to give an item away. So they could put something in the gift bag and give an item away to every single one of our guests. So that was a product that they could give. So a logoed keychain is what they ended up doing. And every year that they sponsored with us, they picked a new item. So as soon as that person, so their people and their names were on all the valet stuff. As soon as the car was parked and they came back, on their keychain, on their key was a freebie. Now there was a keychain hooked onto their keys when they came back into the car. And cool. it was just a cool thing to add on. Now, was that a product or service that we needed in order to make our event a success? No, or to make our organization a success, but at the same time, you can see where it was like, we were looking at what would benefit them, what would benefit us. And so their keychain added a lot of value to our event, but it also added a lot of value to their business.
That's right.
And now their number and their contact information was right there on that keychain, you know? And so there was like, we were just thinking about marketing and how could we help brand them alongside us as a real partnership together. So just think through that. Now there are often times where I'll just go right in, you know, one of the locations I went in with the intention is I want this facility donated 100%. So I went in specifically and said, we want to host our event here. And we want you guys to be an in-kind sponsor of that and donate this space on our behalf. Now, I want to just give a disclaimer there. I would never do that by myself. I mean, I wouldn't. I would go back to my team that I had recruited and I would find out, hey, guys, these are our top three locations that we've been talking about. Which location do we want to go to? Who knows who? Who's going to go in and make the ask? Back to patients. Who's back to and organizing your ask? Who's going to be the person who's going to go in and make that ask? It might be me, but it very well may be one of them because they're like, hey, I host, my wedding was there and we host our annual, you know, corporate dinner at that location every single year. They love us. They don't want to lose our business. So it's like, you can see where their buying power is maybe more strong than ours when it comes to that. So I just want you guys to know, have a plan before you go in. Don't just, just knock on the door or pick up the phone. That's where it's like, have the patience enough to just pause for a second and say, we've got one shot at this. Okay. We got one shot to get this location for free. How are we going to approach it and then go after it based on what your team has decided?
This is years ago when I had worked internally with a nonprofit organization. We're talking about years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And there was an annual event that this organization did. And I remember going with the development director to this meeting, this local corporation that had been supporting them for a number of years. We went in and I said, so what do we need to prepare for? What do I need to bring? She says, I got it. Just, you know, bring your notebook, take some notes. If you want to ask some questions, you know, go ahead. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I was too young to know any better. Mm-hmm. We show up, we're in this meeting in the boardroom with, you know, some leadership team members. She's got a notebook. That's it. So what would you guys like to do this year? And I don't know anything about this stuff, right? I'm a young up and coming, professional. And I'm thinking, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And it just felt awkward. Now that organization ended up doing the same thing they had done the previous year as they had done the year prior to that. And I remember going back thinking did we miss an opportunity here?
Yeah.
And now, many, many years later, in hindsight, absolutely, we missed an opportunity. She was resting on her laurels and got complacent. And over the years, I know that company stopped being a supporter of that organization.
That's right.
There was no planning. There was no case study that you talk about. Mm-hmm. There was no enlisting your team. All of these things, and they've supported us in the past. Why wouldn't they support us again this year?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And that's where, why would you ever walk into a meeting unprepared and not having your documentation. And that is actually, Joel, very, very common. So I'm not surprised that you had that experience. And, you know, that's what's happening every single day in a lot of our nonprofits. And so that's where I think you and I being able to share that it's like, we want to match that professionalism of a company with the professionalism of our nonprofits. How can we show up with our sales packet, with our presentation saying, you know, we're going to do things bigger and better this year. Here's what we're going to do. And here's how we want you to be a part of it.
And isn't that part of your brand as well?
Absolutely. You're either like everybody says, you're either, you know, doing something to improve or you're either staying the same and declining. So you're making a choice by, if you're not moving up, you're moving down. You know, so, and that's why so many events are declining and fundraisers are declining. It's because nobody's sitting at the table saying, how are we going to work towards our strategic plan? Like I'm done with, hey, we want to be the best fundraiser in town. Like who cares? I mean, let's be really honest here. Like who cares about that? It's not about having the best fundraiser in town. It's about raising the dollars that you need to fulfill your mission, and you're either doing it or you're not. And so if that fundraiser is getting you towards that goal, then you should be fired up and excited to get new people on board and how to keep it fresh and new. Or we're going to scrap it and we're going to go do something that's going to actually get us towards our goal. So I think that because I have my whole background in event planning and events for fundraisers, I have gotten to the point where I'm like, it's not about events. It's not about putting on the best gala or putting on the best, you know, walk run event. It's about raising the dollars you need to fulfill your mission. Like stop with the craziness of we've always done it that way, or we did it that, you know, we've always raised the money this way. It's like, is it working? And if it's not working, like we got to bring our team together, create a team that's going to say, how do we raise money to fulfill this strategic plan that we've put into place? So, okay, that's my soapbox.
Okay. All right. So
honestly, Joel, you and I, we could talk about organize your ask for days. So I know that we're already going long here, but I just, I know that as people are working towards this, a lot of this is just common sense, you know, just showing up into those meetings and coming prepared, coming with some sort of intention of how you're going to make this relationship better and how you're going to bring value to the people that are a part of your organization.
So. All right. So what are we not covering on this conversation before we wrap things up?
You know, I think that the main, and I feel like this has been my theme throughout every one of our conversations here, is just being intentional. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not want XYZ company a part of my organization because I saw their name slapped on, you know, 10 other fundraisers in town. That does not qualify them for my fundraiser. You know, so intention is all about who cares about us. Who cares about the kind of work that we're doing? And so we're going to put our head down through this entire process that we've been talking about, and we're going to go ask people to be a part of our cause who cares about the work that we're doing. Joel, you know, I actually just came off of a fundraiser yesterday, and so I'm doing this stuff. I'm right there in the weeds with you guys, and I'm sitting in this fundraiser. It was basically a group of about 20 people who had come together, and we were just talking about this, the next step for this fundraiser we were doing. And I looked around the room, and I know this community very well, but the people that were in this room, I didn't know a single one of them before I started this fundraiser. I know all the people who have money in this town, Joel. Like I have been working in this community for a very long time, and I'm looking around the room and I'm like, how do I not know you people? And it's purely because they cared about this cause. They didn't care about the last cause I was working with. They cared about this one.
Interesting.
And so they have money to spend. I didn't even scratch the surface on what money was sitting in that community. You know, and so I just want to remind everybody that there are going to be people that only care about the kinds of work that you're doing, and they're not going to give to the other charities that might be your competitor. They may only want to be engaged in your cause. And so it's your job to find them, to have the conversations with them, and to invite them in.
Awesome. Well said. Well said.
There you go.
We're going to wrap things up in the next episode on Make Your Difference. But Mary, this is, as always, fantastic stuff. And gosh, for those of you listening, heed her advice. We've covered six steps You've gone out, you've made that ask, and these aren't just one and done type asks. These are asks for a longer term engagement and partnership with some of these folks. So Mary, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts around this. And until next week, Mary, you know what, before I forget, if you guys have questions for Mary, you can always shoot her an email at mary@maryvalloni.com. If you have questions around strategy, I'm more than happy to take your questions. Just shoot me an email at joel@tesselstrategies.com. Until next week, keep making a difference in the world.
All right, see you guys soon.